This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. We did a story this past summer about something Jay Powell says all the time.
Monetary policy affects economic activity with long and variable lags.
Famed free market economist Milton Friedman is the guy who made that phrase famous. So we made a couple of calls to understand the origin story and found our way to Jennifer Burns at Stanford.
I am the author of The Last Conservative, Milton Friedman, which will come out in November, but is available now for pre-order.
This being November, that book is now out. So we got Jennifer Burns back on the phone to talk about it. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Let me go to the subtitle of your book first. Why The Last Conservative?
So that's a great question, and it's one I get a lot because Friedman didn't really identify himself as a conservative in his lifetime. But I have two ways in which I think that word is accurate to describe him. So one is, throughout his life, he was not just an academic economist. He was someone who was very close to policymakers, ranging from Barry Goldwater to Richard Nixon to Ronald Reagan. And all of those figures identified their politics as being part of the conservative movement. There's a second reason, though, which is, as an economist, Friedman really made his name by going back to older ideas of economics that the discipline was leaving behind. And he was, in that way, conserving the insights and discoveries of an earlier generation of economists. And the last is really a gesture to the fact that that political synthesis Friedman represented, which was a combination of free market economics, strong national defense, and a global orientation, that synthesis is really coming apart at the seams in our current moment. So I don't actually know that he's the last conservative of that type. I mean, I think there's room for us all to find out, but I think it's a question worth thinking over.
Hold that thought on our current political environment and Milton Friedman, because that's where I want to end. Thank you very much for skipping ahead to the last of my questions. but it also, this idea of him as the last conservative and going back to those values and conserving them, it also made him come off during his lifetime as a little bit of a contrarian, don't you think?
It's true. He was really profoundly out of step politically, intellectually, methodologically with all his peers. And this was a moment when a number of economists with Jewish immigrant backgrounds like him, poured into the academy, really reshaped the field. And they all tended to be politically liberal. And many of them were very much oriented around bringing new mathematical techniques and analyses into economics and making it more quantitative. And Friedman stood against all of this from his earliest days as an economist. And as a result, he was incredibly unpopular, in part because economists thought, well, if it weren't for this guy Friedman, we would all be agreeing on everything and we would have almost unlimited power because we would be able to stand up and in one voice tell politicians and policymakers what to do. And every time they tried to do that, then Friedman would pop up and say, no, they've got it all wrong. And so he really was quite disliked for much of his career.
Let's talk about for a second the things that he is the two things he's most known for now. One is the Chicago School of Economic Thought and Theory, and the other one is this idea of monetarism. And I know I said before we turned on the microphones that I need to keep it high level here, but I do think we need to explain what Milton Friedman was about in economic theory, and that's your job in this interview.
Sure. So I guess I'll start with monetarism. And one easy way to summarize this is by Friedman's famous dictum, inflation is always and everywhere a monetary phenomena. Monetarism really points to the role of money in the economy. And Friedman really developed this idea through the historical studies he did with Anna Schwartz and specifically their analysis of the Great Depression. Mm-hmm. And they concluded what made the Great Depression great was a loss of one-third of the quantity of money in the United States over the course of the early years. And so they said when you measure an economy's health and activity, this really basic idea, how much money is there in the system, is foundational.
And we should also say here that Friedman and Anna Schwartz, his co-author, about whom we're going to talk in a minute, they basically said the Federal Reserve blew it during the Depression.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So it's interesting. If inflation is a monetary phenomena, it's also a political and an institutional phenomena because there were people who were supposed to support the quantity of money circulating in the economy, and those people were the Federal Reserve. And so what they should have done is recognize this is a liquidity crisis, flood as much money as they could into the banking system. Coincidentally, actually not coincidentally, this is what policymakers do today,
right.
In large part because they have imbibed this lesson that Friedman and Schwartz discovered, that in the Great Depression, these extraordinary measures were not taken, and the result was a decade or longer of economic depression.
I mentioned Anna Schwartz a minute ago, also his wife, Rose. He owes, and he kind of acknowledged it, but kind of, you know, rode their coattails, as it were, the role of women in his life and how they helped him in his work. They were critical.
Yeah, absolutely. So at every major publication, Friedman was working closely with a co-author or a collaborator who was a woman. So the most obvious is A Monetary History of the United States, because mm-hmm. Schwartz was a co-author, although she really had to fight and Friedman had to fight behind the scenes for her to get proper credit for that book. But one of his technical works of economics, A Theory of the Consumption Function, what I uncovered in my research is this group of women economists who studied consumption, and you talked with Friedman about their ideas and their findings during summer vacations. And over the years, these conversations grew more and more robust, more and more important to him. And eventually he wrote them up in a paper that then turned into the book. And so that was basically a way for women at a time when economics as a discipline wouldn't really recognize their contribution. They almost planted their ideas with Friedman, right. And you know, saw them prosper and grow there.
It's you talk about this in the book a little bit, the whole idea of home economics.
That's right. Well, it's a great irony because right. Women were considered to have expertise in buying, selling, shopping, these types of things. And so those were kind of left aside. That was women's work. And over the course of the 20th century, how to support consumption, which is an essential part of demand, became really important to the political system and the economics profession. And so the people who knew the most about actual consumption, how real people, real families made these decisions, were these women researchers who were often in low prestige, low pay jobs. And Friedman figured out how to use their findings and how to think the way they did. And then because he was a tenured professor, he was able to package these ideas in a way that really caught the attention of the broader profession.
Mm. I want to talk about Milton Friedman, as you call him in the book, the political figurehead, his alignment with Goldwater and Nixon and Reagan. And now you progress through the Republican Party of today. I wonder two things about Friedman if he comes back. He dies in 2006. He comes back today and he looks around, number one, at the nominally conservative party in this country. What does he think?
So one way to think about that is to understand that throughout his life, he saw himself as fighting a countercurrent in Republican politics and a conservative movement, a populist and conspiratorially minded conservative. Mm-hmm. So this started in the 1950s when he saw himself as fighting what he called the McCarthy-McCormick wing. That was Joe McCarthy, the anti-communist senator, and Robert McCormick, the head of the isolationist, the publisher of the isolationist Chicago Tribune. So those were, to him, he called them sometimes the crackpot conservatives of the radical fringe. And that was who he was hoping to displace. So I think he would see, you know, the current state of play today is this is an old tendency. This is something that happens over and over again. And we can't give in to the more populist and conspiratorially minded trends. We have to provide a better alternative.
And then the management of this economy today. I mean, Jay Powell, for crying out loud, I don't know if you watch his press conferences every, whatever it is, 6 weeks, but pretty much every time Powell talks about the long and variable lag of monetary policy. And Joe Biden in the 2020 campaign said Milton Friedman's not in charge anymore. I mean, he's still a presence in the management of this economy 15 years after he died, almost 20 now.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And just, you know, going back to my title, The Last Conservative, there's a way in which he's the last conservative because his ideas have become very important to liberals and to Democrats. And they've kind of marked out a centrist liberalism that, you know, is now under attack from a more progressively oriented members of the party. So, you know, I think when Joe Biden talks about Milton Friedman, it's kind of gesturing to that divide within the Democratic Party. In terms of Jay Powell, I think that as inflation has emerged, Friedman has become an important figure because he was really part of the first effort to tackle the great inflation in the 1970s. And so to talk about Friedman is to signal a certain position and to sort of call on his prestige and his credentials.
When you look around in this economy today, what signs of Milton Friedman do you still see in policies or programs?
So beyond the inflation debate, I think it's really interesting how pandemic relief was structured. It was really structured along the lines of the earned income tax credit, whether it was a child tax care credit or some of the more direct relief. And this is what Friedman had been calling for most of his lifetime. And so I think that model of policy has become very ingrained and become very natural. And it was not at all in his day. So that's one thing I see.
This is, with all possible respect, this is a tome. It is not light reading, as much as I enjoyed it. But what do you want people to know about Milton Friedman? And I'm going to ask you to answer that in like 45 seconds. And yes, you wrote a 450-page book on the guy. But what's it important for people to know about this guy?
What I really want them to know is that the Friedman you might see on YouTube or hear about, you know, the last things he said in the 90s and the 80s is not the full Friedman. And you really have to understand the young Friedman and the Friedman who lived through the Great Depression, lived through World War II, lived through the crisis of stagflation, and that his ideas really respond to those historical moments, and that whether we agree with the conclusions he came to or not, we have a model of somebody thinking through his times and doing his best to use the intellectual tools and capacities he has to propose new solutions and new ideas.
It's a book called Milton Friedman, The Last Conservative. Jennifer Burns at Stanford wrote it. Professor Burns, thanks for your time. I appreciate it, and I enjoyed the book.
Thanks so much.